From KCRW Santa Monica and KCRW.com, it's The Treatment. Welcome to The Treatment. I'm Elvis Mitchell. I'm sitting across from the writer-director of Professor Marsden and the Wonder Woman. One of my favorite films of hers is about, I guess almost 15 years old by now, her first film from her first short, DEBS, which was an acronym for Discipline, Energy, Beauty, and Strength. And she's drawn the stories that deal with acronyms, because that certainly can be found in Professor Marsden and the Wonder Woman. First of all, Angela, thanks so much for being here.
Thanks for having me.
I guess the thing for me that kind of unites these two projects, and we'll talk about Professor Marsden more specifically, is that they both seem to me to be about characters who together make a whole. And they're both about quartets, really. I mean, you think about the trio and then the character played by Connie Britton, who's another side. But there's almost always in your pieces, at least in these two we can say, one character who leads with their heart, another character who leads with their head, another character who's kind of a naive. And that's kind of what these two films have in common, don't they?
That's totally fascinating to me. And I would have never, ever in a zillion years kind of put that together. But that's really, really true, I think.
Yeah, I just wonder if that's what attracted you to, because I know Debs is for you both as something that exists to comment on popular culture, but to exist as its own culture. And you made a piece in Professor Marsden about people who were trying to comment on the culture while bringing something of themselves to popular culture.
It's absolutely true. And I really feel like this, I kind of try to find this nexus of pop culture where, because I think both of them in different ways, like Debs was my attempt to kind of have the teen movie I always wished I had when I was a teenager. It kind of came out of a very like organic sensibility. And I always kind of strive to have really strong female protagonists. But what I've kind of noticed recently, which you're kind of picking up on, is this idea of like the divided feminine, like that women are kind of have to play different roles. And I kind of explore how they're divided up and then made whole again, which I think has a lot to do with both Debs and kind of Professor Marsden and Wonder Woman in a lot of ways.
Sure, because clearly that's a big part of the creation of Wonder Woman, but also I sort of feel like between the characters, there's a character, certainly the character played by Connie, who represents the judgment of women. And then you also have a character played by Rebecca Hall, who represents, playing Elizabeth Marsden, who plays this kind of woman who's dangerously sort of resigned herself to being intellectual because she's afraid to let herself go and to feel in some ways. And I just wonder if that's something that it's kind of a current thing for you coming up, or did this become a way to just dramatize these things? Because it fascinates me.
Oh, it's so interesting. I think with the character of Elizabeth Marsden, as played by Rebecca Hall, what I was really interested in is, it's funny, I met Rebecca Hall when she was really interested in playing the role, and I'm just over the moon because I think she's like, if not the most brilliant actor working right now, one of them. And we had a conversation about To All the Brilliant Women and about how both she and I know so many just fierce women who are so frustrated because the playing field is not equal, and kind of the frustration and injustice and kind of how that feels about women who, for whatever reason, because of this uneven playing field, haven't been able to kind of live up to their full potential. And I think that's one of the things that we were exploring, like glass ceilings and kind of how she was, like Marsden was afforded all of these opportunities to kind of and a lot of times fail, kind of, and still kept getting chance after chance. William Marsden is the character and the person in real life who invented the lie detector test along with help from Elizabeth and also created the Wonder Woman comic. And so we kind of explored this notion. But I do feel that all of my characters kind of have this heart-head split.
For audiences who haven't seen Professor Marsden and the Wonder Woman yet, if you could sort of tell them what they're going to be seeing.
Oh, sure. Professor Marsden and the Wonder Woman is about Dr. William Moulton Marsden, who's the man who created Wonder Woman. And he the two women in his life, his wife, Elizabeth Marston, and their mutual lover, Olive Byrne, and how the two women were kind of the inspiration for the Wonder Woman character. So it kind of explores, they lived in a polyamorous relationship and had a family for...
In the 40s.
In the 40s. Yeah, sorry, in the 1920s. This film spans the 1920s through the 1940s. And they had a family together, and both Olive and Elizabeth each had two children, and they lived together for many years. And after Marston died, then Elizabeth and Olive continued to live together for another 40 years until their deathbeds, basically.
It's a treat when we're talking about synchronicity with the writer-director Professor Marston and the Wonder Woman, Angela Robinson. As somebody who grew up reading comics, I was always kind of impressed by the angularity of Wonder Woman and the fact that in the comics that there's this really kind of triumphal spirit, and there's something really childlike about Diana Prince as a character. And we can sort of see those juxtapositions between Olive and Elizabeth here. And I wonder, did you read comics as a kid at all? Was that something you were interested in?
I did a little bit. But I think my first kind of exposure, I know I as a kid, I read a few Wonder Woman comics, and I know I had like a lunchbox and thing I collect. Like, I really gravitated towards her.
You must have known the TV show.
Yes. But it was really the Linda Carter TV show that kind of solidified my fandom of the character. But Wonder Woman was the only one. Like, I very much remember wanting to have superpowers and wanting to kind of be this kind of, you know, version that could be me, but better. And I related to that kind of, but she was the only girl. She was the only representation that you could kind of latch onto. So that made a deep impression.
I'm sure from your research, you found out that there have been so many iterations of Wonder Woman. You even mentioned in the end titles that there's one point where she was stripped of her superpowers, mm-hmm. turned into a Dinah Rigg type character from the Avengers. See, I know this stuff. I'm sorry to say.
Yeah, you do.
And given a really stereotypical Asian mentor to walk her through all this stuff.
Yeah, 100%.
I Ching. It's sad that I know this.
No, it's fantastic.
No, I'm sure my father's glad he worked two jobs so he could go to college and talk about Wonder Woman comics on public radio. But I think what's interesting about these movies, and you as a dramatist, is that all these pieces kind of form a whole, but they don't exactly join together seamlessly.
Mm-hmm,
you know,
mm-hmm.
there's still like room for other things, for experience, in effect, to fill in the holes around them.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. I think I'm kind of fascinated with the job of kind of creating empathy and also pop culture as political act.
You couldn't be more political than Wonder Woman, by the way. It was unlike the other comics of the period, which were sort of these expressions of teenage boys or boys in their early 20s. This was expressly created to be a political commentary on popular culture.
100%. And I feel actually very kind of a kinship towards Marston, and I think in the kind of like uber endeavor of what he was trying to do, which was very literally to make what he called psychological propaganda. And he was a psychologist, and he did all sorts of experiments on human behavior.
And had an acronym himself, did
yes,
he not?
Yes, he did. He created a psychological theory he called DISC theory, which stands for dominance, inducement, submission, and compliance. And in a nutshell, he thought that women were inherently loving and nurturing, and men were inherently violent and anarchistic, like when you got down to their core natures. So the path to peace on the planet would be to let women be in charge. But he knew that men wouldn't give up their power voluntarily. So he created Wonder Woman kind of as a vehicle for his psychological ideas to make it pleasant for boys and men to love and respect a powerful woman.
But I think a big part of that too, and this gets to me the way you treat women, female iconography in your work, is the resistance to women of strength.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, think about Max in Debs, who is this character who's a character who leads with strength and doesn't know how to deal with people not knowing how to respond to her.
Mm-hmm.
And Wonder Woman is that kind of icon too in some ways, mm-hmm. isn't it?
Totally, totally. And I wanted to, in the film, I really wanted to explore the very real pushback for being a strong, kind of empowered woman. Do you know what I mean? Like, I feel like there's a lot of lip service given to do that, speak your truth, be strong, and kind of that is put on women. But the film really explores the very real sacrifices they make and the very, like, you do. I mean, we're kind of experiencing that right now of just, do you know what I mean? How people are shamed or silenced, or just you suffer in your career, or you suffer in your home, or you suffer in how you're able to put food on the table, that there's very real consequences to speaking your truth. And I think that both films kind of explore this notion of trying to be who you are, and societies, and both films are similar in that I feel like the conversation has moved past, like, are my feelings bad or good? Like, in both films, they don't argue, oh, I'm bad for feeling this, or I'm good for feeling this. It's all about, I feel this, how do I exist in the world?
But I wonder, because these characters, we talk about them, they sound almost archetypal. Mm-hmm. If you start from that point as a writer, saying these people are going to feel like archetypes, but to find a way to give them voice so that they mm-hmm. sound like people rather than points of view.
I don't think so. I mean, I do think it's really interesting to kind of look back on it, because I wrote Debs very early in my career, and then Professor Marston much later. And so I used to kind of approach writing from a kind of more outside-in perspective. Do you know what I mean? Where I would kind of structure it and outline it. And the way I write now is actually almost more freeform, where I just start writing the characters and I see what comes up for me. And it's interesting, because the first scene I wrote in Professor Marston is the scene where Elizabeth Marston and William Marston are sitting on the steps, and they first see Olive sitting there. And a lot of it for me is I had very recently kind of, you know, in Hollywood had a conversation where I was talking to a friend of mine who was a totally liberal, you know, he would call himself a feminist, and he was talking about another woman, but, and even writing about, like, he was talking about an actress, and he was writing about her, do you mean, like, they were on a show together, and I was like, oh, he was basically putting all this stuff on her, and I was like, no, that's not what's going on with her at all, like, in my head, do you know what I mean, like, and so, this kind of, the initial idea was about two people who had a lot of ideas about this girl and were kind of objectifying her in different ways. They just had who they thought she was. Do you know what I mean? And that they kind of had the power, and they were looking at her and analyzing her. What's she thinking? What's she doing? This is how life must be, like her. And then she kind of comes into their life and upends it till, do you know what I mean? Till, I don't want to do any spoilers for the end of the movie, but she totally ends up shifting everything they think about, really everything in their lives.
It's the last one to unpack here. We'll take a break. We're talking about Wonder Women with the writer, director, Professor Marsden, and the Wonder Women, Angela Robinson. It's The Treatment. There's more to come. Stay with us.
Introducing the KCRW donation car, designed to be recycled. This first-of-its-kind vehicle will save you time, space, and hassle by disappearing. Enjoy the luxury and comfort of turning your underused car into a donation worth hundreds, even thousands of dollars. The KCRW donation car, already in your garage, driveway, or on cinder blocks outside your house. Act now at kcrw.com/cars.
Welcome back. It's The Treatment. My guest is Angela Robinson. Her new film as writer-director is Professor Marsden and the Wonder Women. And one of the things so much to say to you here, but one of the things I really want to get to is you did something I think is really hard to crack, which is you wrote a movie about writers. Which is not an activity that normally lends itself to the stuff of cinema.
Right. No, that is
true.
Did you
think about how hard that would be to do? It's just... Object lesson?
I found them, I mean, I have to say, like, I found them just fascinating people. I took a really deep dive into William Moulton Marston's work, which is fascinating. And they were early psychologists.
But he's kind of all over the place. You can see him almost trying to find himself in each thing he wrote about. I mean, just
totally.
Because he's trying to figure, you can tell that in every sort of aspect of humanity or the personality he writes about, that in some way he seems to be writing about himself.
Yes, 100%. And I was really taken. He wrote this book kind of, you know, fairly early in his academic career called The Emotions of Normal People, which just the title alone just is it's so breathtaking to me because in the first line of his book is, "Are you normal?" And which is one of the early lines of the film. And that core question, are you normal? And in the book, Emotions of Normal People, he basically sets out, he starts with, are you normal? And then the next 40 pages are a defense of why he's normal and you're not if you don't, if you think he's not, basically. So that, I thought, that core question really resonated with me. And so I didn't think of them necessarily as writers or academics, but that they were really involved in this. It was, they were early psychologists, which had just kind of broken off from the philosophy department.
Which is said, you make a point of having to say that in the movie.
Yeah, and that they wanted psychology to be a hard science and taken seriously. And they were really very committed to the idea that if you can change hearts and minds, you can make the world a better place. And that, and they were deeply committed to investigating emotions, like how you were feeling, which is what the lie detector kind of arose out of, a kind of study of emotion. And so to me, it didn't, like, writers seem like cerebral and in their head, and they're academics, but I felt like they were very dynamic people who were engaged in a very real, I saw them more as scientists than writers, even though they were writers.
It's interesting, too, because I just feel like it's a movie about people who are, like, almost furiously articulate and just can't help expressing themselves all the time. And I wonder if that was your into the material. And one of, because it's clearly one of the things you find attractive about these people and about characters in Deb, too, the ones who stick with it, the ones who really can talk about what their states of being, no matter what they're going through.
I do find it, but I feel that there's a, I think I'm kind of very verbal person. But I also kind of, I mean, somebody, I don't know where, somebody wrote, they were like, it's like the words are, can I swear on the show? I don't
Go.
Think so.
We have buttons.
She's having so much fun with the words that are like f***ing each other, like the actual words that you like. And so, you know, a little bit guilty as charged. Rebecca Hall would, you know, go through the script and say, that's a little too writerly. Can we take that part out? And I'd say yes, but
didn't you want her to be writerly though? I mean, it was
No, I did. And I mean, and if you ask Rebecca too, she'd be like, I love the words, like she does. But I do feel what I think's really interesting is people who are incredibly articulate about what they think they are feeling, who that's not what they're feeling at all. Do you know that they're, do you know, like that they, I feel that there's, what's interesting is the tension between how they're trying to explain or make sense of what they're feeling and how erratic that is and totally, you know, not at all what they're feeling or not.
Not only that, but there's an eagerness in her that, I mean, an eagerness to experience rather than to articulate our experience.
Yes.
Which I think is a really great way to ground the character or to build the character.
Yes. Do you know what I mean? Like the, I kind of see them spinning around her, both Elizabeth and Marston. And a lot of times, and this was my experience of kind of my investigation of Marston's work, is that, like, sometimes I'm like, you are full of shit. Like, you are just, like, I'm reading what you are putting out, and I'm just like, you are full of shit. But then, in the next sentence would be something incredibly true and profound and revealing. And I was like, not only are these, do you know what I mean? Like, do I relate to that? But it's also like people I know, do you, you know? And that the, I wanted to make the characters accessible and kind of, and just to kind of tell a charming and emotional love story between three people.
It's a treatment. We're talking about filtering design for living into the creation of a comic character for the film Professor Marza and the Wonder Woman. Its writer-director Angela Robinson is here with me. As we talk about that, for me, this scene actually feels the most dramatic. It's a scene where they're kind of brought down to earth. When each, where Marza and Elizabeth are trying to get jobs, we get a chance to see that they're too big for these rooms, that these things they're trying to do. And that's almost the moment to me of like tragedy, of just seeing these two different kinds of Icarus being too close to the sun, and this is what happens to them. But they don't give up.
No, I think that is very true. I see them as very heroic characters. And weirdly, the character of Aslan in, you know, The Lion, Witch of the Wardrobe, sure. Which, I mean, goes to the Icarus or, you know, even Christ-type characters.
But very much the Christ-type
characters. I mean, Aslan's maybe pushing it a little bit. But the idea of these people who were too big, their ideas were too big, what they wanted was too big, and that they were kind of protected in academia. They were kind of allowed to fly their freak flags and kind of posit this ideas, and then they kind of fly too close to the sun, they get too reckless, they kind of...
They're too arrogant.
They're too arrogant, do you know? Yeah, they're too just high on their own supply of like ideas of literary, and then they get kind of just smacked out, and you feel them fall hard, and there are these kind of huge shifts, which I emotionally really. I was telling a story to somebody. I don't remember where, but I remember I was in college with one of my first girlfriends, and we went to like an all-night like gay club or something and we were just having a blast. Like, I was so in love, and you're dancing all night, and you're kind of drunk, and you're just like in this swirl of where it's cool. And then we're walking home and like deeply in love, and then this truck pulled up and these two guys yelled at us and like threw beer bottles our way.
Oh my
and
gosh.
It was just,
where was this?
Providence, Rhode Island. Okay, sorry.
Oh, Brown. Oh,
sorry.
Oh,
yeah, Brown. Boom. Okay. Like, okay. All sorts of light bulbs go out. Okay.
Yeah. Suddenly, that ticking you heard was all this drawer slamming shit. Oh, I know. I know exactly who you are.
Exactly who I am. But it was this core notion that you can kind of experience what you think is this freedom, and then you're slapped in the face with reality. Kind of in this dish. And throughout the film, they kind of, you know, go too far and they're slapped back to earth. Do you know what I mean? And this kind of emotional way of being, of kind of, you know, blurring yourself into a false sense of security and then kind of getting punished. And I think that is a emotional dynamic that kind of happens through, which I very much related to, and I feel like is infused into the film. So there's these big highs, and then all of a sudden these big lows. And then I do think it's kind of built around, and it was this idea too of Paradise Island, which is built into Wonder Woman, of that there was this utopian place where women ran it, and they're intellectual, they have all the technology in the world, and it's free. And then Wonder Woman, man lands on it, and Steve Trevor, and then Wonder Woman chooses to lead, and then she goes into this horrible, unjust place.
And has to sublimate herself in the doing of it.
It has to sublimate, is man's world. That's literally what he called it.
Oh,
and she has to pretend to be a secretary. So she's an Amazon warrior princess, do you mean, from a utopian society, and then she goes to work as a secretary. And similarly, I felt Elizabeth's arc asked that too, because she had 3 degrees. She's one of the only three women in like 1918 to graduate from law school. I mean, she was just like a powerhouse for all intents and purposes. And then they get turfed out of academia, and she works the rest of her life as a secretary. And I was like, that's crazy to me. And like, same as in the movie, they're like, nothing wrong with being a secretary. But that it was just for her, this was how she chose, and that she ended up supporting the family for many years or something, where Marston was able to kind of pursue his books and still pursue his research and ultimately pursue comic books. So he got tons of do-overs, and she didn't.
And we can even say, this is going to get this in the movie, he created a studio with H.G. Peter, who was the illustrator, and brought women into work in the comics business.
Yeah, 100%. Totally.
But we can't sit here and talk about me bringing up the fact that there's a lot of, how best put this politically, cosplay in your movies? Between those girls' school uniforms and Debs and some of the play and outfits here.
This is true. Again, something I have not put together until now.
I'm sorry, you never put this together?
No.
I'm sorry.
Angela, apparently I'm not very introspective about my own work.
You just let your flag fly where it might fly too. But
exactly.
This idea of people sort of playing at these things, then putting these outfits and playing at something else.
Yeah.
You must get some fun out of writing that, don't you? I mean, because it's something that people don't do very often in movies.
That is really true. I mean, a theme in both, which maybe I believe in, I guess I do believe in this, is like liberation through fantasy, kind of. Do you mean that you can, which I think is part of what attracted me to Wonder Woman in the first place, is this idea that in real life you have to, there's all of these rules that often, do you mean, I may consider myself like a queer person of color, do you mean that where you, a lot of times are presented with all of the limits, do you like, and so it's this, and then, but if you can, my freedom is through my imagination, my ability to actually create other worlds which have different rules. And so I feel like there's a lot of liberation in fantasy. And I think that, I mean, a lot of people who I've talked to have commented on how they were really pleasantly surprised that the sex scenes where they kind of get together, do you mean, aren't gratuitous or they didn't feel like they were exploitative. And I think that's because in it, I told Sony Stage 6, who gave us the financing and loved the script and kind of pulled the trigger ultimately, I said the lie detector scenes are about sex, but the sex scenes are about freedom.
But they're also, in both places in these costumes, kind of like kids at play. They're keeping their real world at bay a little bit too, aren't they? I mean, it's almost this, I'm not going to say almost, it's this expression of innocence in these outfits in both films, isn't there?
No, definitely, definitely. And some sort of solidarity, kind of, you know, and I think that that is the idea of being able to kind of dress up and form a community or a unit or a union, do you know what I mean? Like in this, where we are kind of coming together. I feel like that's a core idea, that we can be special and be different, but as a unit, and that that's fun. I do think that there's something very kind of playful and utopian about that. Yeah.
And I can't believe it. We're out of time. Thank you so much for doing this. Really, thank you, Angela.
Thanks so much for having me.
My pleasure. My guest will make me connect Noel Coward and Wonder Woman is Angela Robinson. Her new film as writer-director is Professor Marsden and the Wonder Woman. The show is recorded at NPR West by Theo Mondel. It's mixed by Kat Yore, edited by Blake Veit, associate producer. I have no fantasies. It's the treatment. Catch up on past episodes of The Treatment, go to kcrw.com or listen on your smartphone with KCRW's mobile apps, or subscribe to the podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, or if you listen to podcasts. The Treatment is produced and distributed by KCRW Santa Monica.